Welcome to Hello Somebody, a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia. Before we begin, I want to give a special shout out to my team. Thank you, Sim, Tiffany, Sam, and the team over at Good Juju Studios, Erica England, Pepper Chambers, the hot one, and my social media team. Excited today, as I am every time I get a chance to have conversations with people who reflect on what is happening in our world. Today on Hello Somebody, we welcome an amazing and outspoken progressive leader. She's an author and law professor. She was a surrogate on the Bernie Sanders 2020 campaign and one of the first public figures to endorse the now Congress members Ocasio-Cortez and Jamal Bowman. She is an enthusiastic supporter of yours truly as well. Woo-wee! Hello, somebody family. Let's welcome Zephyr Teachout. Zephyr, how you doing, baby?
Oh my gosh, I'm doing so well. It's so great to be on your show, Senator.
It is great to be with you too. Oh my God, I was just in New York. I had the opportunity to interview on The Breakfast Club. That interview aired and it was just so wonderful to have Charlemagne, the guy who actually, Hello Somebody, is part of his Black Effect Network, but I was with him. I was with Angela Yee and also DJ Envy in your town, and it was beautiful.
It was a great interview. I saw it on YouTube.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I stayed very controlled. I did.
Yes.
Very
and
diplomatic.
It was so real and human. It was really beautiful. Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed it. That's why I love going on The Breakfast Club, because I get a chance to really be more of me. You know, it's different from other interview venues. If you know what I mean. You've done lots of interviews, and each interview has its own kind of tone and spirit, I would say. Flow.
No, the spirit was like, I mean, we don't need to redo the interview, but it was the whole range of you, which was wonderful.
Yeah, so. No, I totally enjoyed it. Can't wait to get back. So the books you've written, you talk a lot about corruption. You are a board member of CREW, which is Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington and the Nation. And you are an advisory board member of the American Economic Liberties Project and the Open Market Institute. You've also been a candidate for office.
I have.
Oh my God. So I want to talk about that experience a little bit. And
yeah.
You know, most recently I know that you ran for attorney general, but you ran before that. And just even talking about what it's like to run for office in general. But before we get to that, you do a lot. You have written a lot of articles and also books about corruption and about really how politics and policy really controls the board, if you will. If we were thinking about life as a board game, what is put forward is public policy. Who sets the rules? They really control the game. Is that a fair assessment?
It's so important. And it's, I think people know it, but just like painting a picture of the difference, like the difference between the way you're running for office and most Yes. people are running for office for Congress. You know, for most people running for office for Congress, not just the first time, but the minute they get in office, the second time, the third time, the fourth time, 40% of their day, and sometimes 75, but you know, almost half of their day, every day, is sitting with a folder, a binder of names of the richest people they know, anybody who knows.
Yes.
And it says like, so-and-so went to this college and cares about these issues and has this interest in, you know, kites or whatever, you know, pick your, and basically what this does is it takes people who may start with an interest in public service and says, okay, your day job is calling the richest people on earth and sucking up to them. I mean, that's the job, and making them feel like they can want to give you $2,000, $5,000. It is so corrupting because it takes people, and instead of thinking about dental care,
yes.
Thinking about people who have inconsistent schedules at work, thinking about credit card debt. They're thinking about, like, okay, what's Mike's doggy's name again? You know, like, and their interests, it's totally divergent. So when they read white papers, it's just white papers. They're just numbers when you're talking about unemployment, or when you're talking about, you know, like $28,000 a year family of four is paying out of pocket in healthcare.
Right. And we don't necessarily, I mean, the way that you're framing this, because I want the people who are joining us in this conversation today to understand that as you lay it out, it really does not, there's no emotion behind just seeing the people who have the greatest need in this country just as widgets. The system does not recognize them as breathing, living human beings with needs, but instead the system bends to the few who have the greatest amount of money. That means they have the greatest amount of access and resources.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's legal to bribe politicians in the United States of America. I mean, simply
put. Yeah, I mean, it's what the Supreme Court calls free speech. It's a form of corruption. It's quite
so
clear.
So let's talk about Citizens United. Professor, yeah. Can you walk people through what Citizens United is, what happened, and more importantly, Professor, why should people care? Why should the everyday person that is just trying to work their job, figure out how they're going to make ends meet, why should they care and know about Citizens United?
If a big corporation wants to spend unlimited money in a campaign, it can do so because of the First Amendment.
Meaning that company has speech, like you and I.
Yeah, right. So the way the court said it was I skipped a step.
Okay.
Because the way the court tried to defend it is saying that you, as a person, have a right to hear corporate speech. So it's sort of framed in terms of the First Amendment right to hear,
okay,
as opposed to the First Amendment right to speak. But effectively, there's other language in the opinion that talked about big corporations being some of the most important voices in our society and we shouldn't quash them. And it clearly expressed a view that is either like really cynical or really naive. But the impact is that before Citizens United, if there was, you know, a state ban or a federal ban, and there were local and federal bans, because people don't want unlimited corporate spending in elections. Nobody, you know, people don't want that.
That's right.
Those bans were upheld and the Supreme Court reached in and struck down those laws. And the effect has been, you know, the first few years, it was like a little spending here and there. But over the last 10 years, you've seen it move from checkers to chess. You know, we're into really sophisticated major super PACs. You know, this is what super PACs came out of, is that after Citizens United, people started setting up these organizations. They say, as long as you don't coordinate with a candidate, they can spend unlimited money in elections. And I mean, you see this in your own election.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A red box was put up on one of my competitors' website, and that was a signal to independent expenditures or dark money on what she wanted them to hit me on. But your point about they're not coordinating.
Right. So what happens is the Supreme Court is like truly, 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 there's two things. One is they're totally out of touch. The Supreme Court that decided Citizens United didn't have anybody on it who has experience in politics.
Sure.
Actually, you know, when O'Connor, and I didn't certainly agree with everything that Justice O'Connor did, but she was a voice on the court that understood how money in politics works, because she had experience in politics herself. The minute she left the court, you see the other justices taking over with a vision of like not understanding power, not understanding politics, and saying, oh yeah, it's not corrupting if this outside group puts out this ad. So I want to put a finer point on it, Senator. Yes. What people do is they say they take video of the candidate and they put it up on YouTube for the super PAC to pick and use that video. It's not coordinate. We're doing air quotes for those of you.
Right. I know that is important to say. Yes, we are doing air quotes because this is a podcast and people will be listening by and large. And we are doing air quotes.
But it's like It sounds so crazy that the court is this out of touch, but the court is this out of touch. And the problem is then that, you know, a lot of, you know, Senator, you are one of the bravest politicians I know. And people really love and need that bravery. But one of the big impacts of super PACs is a lot of politicians are scared. They may not be terrible people, but their instincts are fear. They're scared of losing an election more than anything.
Sure.
And so they think, oh, well, if I don't say anything about Amazon's tax rate, I'll just talk about the other things that I care about. If I don't say anything, then I won't get the attack. Because it's not just the super PACs that spend money, it's the threat of super PACs. And when you know that look on politicians' eyes, that kind of like, I'm really a nice person, I'm trying to serve you, but don't make me do anything scary look.
Right. So how do we, so for the everyday person,
yeah,
or the person again that's in survival mode, they may have lost their job or they're underemployed right now. They may have been impacted. Well, we all have been impacted by COVID, but to some degree, if they lost their job and they had employer-sponsored health care that they lost because healthcare is commodified in the United States of America, can you break down, can you help paint a picture as to why that particular type of person who's just trying to make it every day should care about the corrupting influence of big money in politics? What's the connection? Why should I care?
Yeah. Well, right now you have big corporations that just aren't paying taxes.
So zero taxes, zero federal
zero
taxes. So Amazon, Walmart, others.
And these companies are not paying their taxes. And that means they aren't pitching in to provide the basic services that we need in this country. They're basically taking advantage of the country, but they're not pitching in.
And the reason, the connection to them not paying federal taxes is rooted in the tax code. And the tax code is created by politicians who are lobbied by said corporations and the ultra, ultra wealthy to create legal loopholes in the law so that by the time all is said and done, they're paying zero taxes while Big Mama had to pay federal taxes. Do I have that?
I'm going to add it's going to be PSNT, Professor Senator Nina Turner.
Well, I'm learning from the best on this. I am.
Well, I just want to like make an additional point here to underline it is a lot of the bodies are buried in taxes. It's taxes and subsidies.
Okay.
Because it's the area where, you know, if you want to do something really evil, you often do it really, make it really complicated.
Yes.
And so it's why your question is so important is because they're making it complicated on purpose. So you're like, okay, wait, I thought my politician agreed with me on these things, but look, the wages aren't going up, the services are going down. They feel the disconnect and feel really confused, understandably confused. And it's because a lot of times, a lot of the times that your politicians will sell away people's interests are on taxes and subsidies, because they're not like big flashy headline issues, but it's actually where so much of the policy is made. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I was thinking about like what it's going to be like with Congresswoman Turner. And I was thinking about the beginning of the pandemic. There was a big congressional bill called the CARES Act.
Yes.
And the CARES Act had a lot of good things in it, but it also had a $500 billion giveaway to big business, just like a bazooka at big business. And like at Wall Street, not people in your district who desperately need the help.
So everybody should care about that because we need more conscious minded people to speak up and also lean on the people who they elect, particularly on the federal level of government, to say we need the rules to change, to bend towards the will of the everyday people in this country. So if we're giving the ultra wealthy in this country the biggest tax breaks and they're not paying into our public coffer, if you will, because taxes is a big pot of money and government is designed for us to do collectively what we cannot do as individuals. So if we start to cut or we don't have enough and we look at the tax code to see that not just big businesses are not paying their fair share of taxes, but we have the ultra wealthy who are not paying their fair share either, then that could equate to less money for schools, less money for housing, less money for healthcare. So when we're debating universal healthcare, for example, and you have people on one side who say, we can't afford it. And you have progressives on the other side saying, yes, we can. And this is how, make the wealthy and well-connected pay their fair share. Let's cut the military industrial complex spending, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how we want people to know that this is so vitally important, and no one should be able to buy off politicians. But guess what? The lobbying that goes on for big businesses and big interests, it's in the billions of dollars every single year.
Yeah.
I mean, combined billions of dollars spent on lobbying.
Yeah. And when you're looking at, you know, at healthcare, you have more lobbyists than you have staffers, basically, in DC.
To try to stop universal healthcare from happening.
Right. But I don't want to just be gloomy about it. Like,
yeah, let's not.
You wouldn't be running. And so the question is, okay, so you have a Supreme Court. And I think sometimes it's like, okay, what do you do when you have a Supreme Court that's made this terrible decision? Right. And yes, we have to work to overturn it, but that is not the only thing to do. There's real signs of, not signs, there's like a real movement in this country where there's more progressives who are getting elected. And it's not just progressives, it's people who are willing to speak the truth when it's hard.
That's right.
And to name names,
yes. No,
not speak abstractly, and to understand that this is about power, right? So one way to deal with this like gross amount of power, it's just disgusting. It's just like there are more lobbyists hired for, the pharmaceutical industry and big tech, just whose job is just to sort of be in Washington and let people know what's acceptable and what's not acceptable.
Right.
They're more, but how do you take that on? You take that on actually with more and more members of Congress who are willing to work together in an organized fashion to block these giveaways.
And so it can be done, right? Ultimately, the power is in the people's hands. You made me think of two groups. One is Unrigged, and they work in a very bipartisan way.
Yep.
There are Democrats, Republicans, and people who are independent leaders from a political ideology perspective who join in with Unrigged, and they stand up in solidarity against big money and politics. And another group that came to mind, of which I am a part of, is American Promise, that's working on getting the 28th Amendment to the Constitution.
Yes.
So that we can do away with Citizens United. There has been some progress, to your point, Professor, in states across the country, resolutions have been introduced. And ultimately what we need is to have the federal government, the Congress, take a vote so that then that could go down into the states. And we can have a constitutional convention and really turn this around.
Well, there's one other idea that I think is really exciting.
Okay.
And you remember when we were talking about Citizens United and the Supreme Court said you have a right to hear, right?
Yes.
Well, they haven't said the same thing for a right to hear foreign governmental money. Okay. And in fact, after Citizens United, 2 years after Citizens United, there was a case where it was like, wait, if you think there's a right for corporations to speak, why can't every foreign government get involved in U.S. elections? And the Supreme Court said, no. We're not going to resolve our inconsistency, but foreign money doesn't have a right in our elections. So what that means is that the federal government and states can pass laws banning any corporate spending if it has foreign ownership.
Aha.
Well, that is 95% of the Fortune 100. 85% of the Fortune 500, basically, you pass that law, they can't take advantage of Citizens United anymore. And Seattle actually did that, and I'm hoping New York State does it. There is a bill in Congress, but we need more champions.
Yes. Oh, that is so amazing. And that's what I would call a good loophole.
Right.
A good loophole. how can people get involved? How could, so now, listen, I've listened to Professor Teach Out. My appetite is wet now. I want to know more information. Where do I go? How do I get involved? How do I buy her book? What, how do we get involved, Professor? Tell us.
Well, one is, right now it is, there's a special election coming up, I think.
Well, that's one way, but we're not going to talk about me.
There's a lot of great organizations that are working on this. The one that's working on that bill that I just mentioned is called Free Speech for People. And they are pushing that in the states and at the federal level. But honestly, I mean, the time is short on a big federal bill, Senate Bill 1 and HR 1. So there's these two big federal bills. They aren't covering what I just talked about, but that would take on this like gross Republican gerrymandering or partisan gerrymandering. Yeah, it's important, actually. You know, I'm a very proud progressive Democrat, but it is true when you get on the ground level, Republicans, Democrats, nobody wants this money in politics. Sort of toxicity. Like it's a real poison. It's a real poison.
It is.
It gets in the way of real debate because it's not about like where we disagree. It's just about somebody with a bunch of cash dictating policy. But right now there's a bill that has passed the House and we really need, you know, it's going to be hard. It's hard with some of the Senate Democratic senators who don't want to do this, but we got to poke a hole in this filibuster to pass these laws for democracy reform, because we have people who are really trying to cut back voting, you know, make it hard to vote.
I mean, right now in 2021, it may be hard for people to believe, but in 47 states, there are about 361 bills percolating through legislatures across the country, last I counted, to not enhance access to the ballot box, not ensuring that people have unfettered access to the ballot box, but really to scale back that access. And it pains me to say that my state is one of those states where legislation has been introduced, and by many, the estimation of many voting rights activists and advocates and experts on in academia and experts in the streets, it is worse than Georgia's in Ohio.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So we definitely need people to really come together, conscious minded people. This is not about political affiliation when it comes to protecting our democracy and access to it and ensuring that not one group has more access than another group. And it is very clear that people who have more money and corporations have more access at this very moment. And we got to demand more from the people that we elect. We have to join organizations that are in this fight. And we must keep pushing to keep this democracy open for everybody, because it's not right now. It's very limiting.
Yeah. I then there's one other thing that I want to talk about in this, you know, something that I have come to after Citizens United is you talk a lot about, you work on it, you fight for it. It's just the real problem of incredible inequality. And I think, I think you are in one of the
poorest.
Yes.
Districts in the country. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after Citizens United, you know, when thinking about corporate power, I have really come to believe and started working on a lot, just taking on corporate power where it lives and using antitrust, which may sound like this like academic geeky thing, but like let's bust up these companies because they're basically becoming kinds of mini governments. You know, when you're talking about hospital chains or you see dollar stores pushing out your local healthy alternatives. You have these big companies that are not treating workers well. They're really abusing their power. They're spying on workers, and we just have to break up their power while we are fighting to change campaign finance law. So I think totally that, you know, those two are connected to me.
They are. And it won't be the first time in history where we've had the discussion about breaking up these companies. It's ironic, you know, as we close out, I just talked to a neighbor of mine who actually works at Amazon. You know that I went to Bessemer along with some other progressives. And she caught me while I was walking down the street with my grandson on our little walk. And she said, I need your help. I work at Amazon and we have to make 200 drops.
Oh my God.
In a day.
Oh my God.
200 drops per person in a day. And if you come back with anything in your truck, you are penalized. And just what she was sharing with me is similar to what I heard when I was in both Birmingham and in Bessemer, where the facility is. But I believe 40% of the people who work, it might be even higher than that, but a greater share of the people who actually live in Birmingham, actually work at that plant. And it just really broke my heart. There are three Amazon facilities in the 11th Congressional District. And I'm standing in front of this young lady. I'm not sure how old she is. I would suspect she's in her late 20s to early 30s. And she said 200 drops per one person. And if you come back, you're penalized. What I heard from the Bessemer folks is that the drivers are too scared to even take breaks to go to the restroom. If you work in the facility, you're afraid to go get a drink of water in the 21st century. I mean, something is wrong. And so what we want the people who have joined us today to understand that there's very real consequences to this kind of concentrated power and unwillingness and cowardice of people who we elect to do just what you just said. One, yes, we got to deal with Citizens United, but there are other ways that we can deal with this by breaking up these companies. We can pass the PRO Act for union workers so that people can unionize without being penalized. You know, a big report came out about how Amazon definitely talk about fear. They put a lot of fear in employees about creating a union, and just, it's just all kinds of unsavory things that are going on. And so we really do need people who have to stand up and fight.
They're using their position of power. I mean, it's
to intimidate.
It's unacceptable.
It is.
They're using their position of power to the young woman you were talking to.
Yes.
They are spying on her. They're studying everybody's breaking point and saying, how many drops can we get without losing, you know, they're studying what her psychological breaking point is. It's humiliating.
It is.
And if we say, no, hey, Amazon, you can be a marketplace, but you can't also own warehouses, then you have unions have a fighting chance to organize those warehouses. Whereas right now you have this behemoth coming down on workers who are terrified and don't have the meaningful options. So it's like I think sometimes in today's economy, people can feel like, how can it be better? But the truth is, this is not a natural state of affairs. This is about gross tyrannical power that is not compatible with our democracy.
That's right. And it's untenable. And we've been here before. I mean, we think about the Gilded Age, you know, and what happened after the Gilded Age was the progressive movement. And so we have the 21st century version of that. That gives me great hope, but we cannot stand back and stand by and allow workers to be intimidated, for them to be humiliated, for them not to make a living wage. I do believe that one job should be enough. You know, I was reading an article in the Dayton Daily News just yesterday, and it said that the jobs that are going to have the most openings from now until 2028 in the state of Ohio are jobs that pay less than $15 an hour. We know nobody can live off of that. And so we got to shake things up. So, Professor, you wrote, author of Corruption in America, From Benjamin Franklin's Snuffbox to Citizens United, Break 'em Up, Recovering Our Freedom from Big Ag, Big Tech, and Big Money, as well as dozens of law review articles. Your writings have appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Foreign Affairs, New Republic, The Nation, Prospect, and oh my God, if I named every publication, we would still be here. Professor Zephyr Teachout, thank you so much for all that you do to keep us thinking and to keep us knowing that we must work to not only break them up, but work to make sure that we keep that big D democracy. And it's going to take all of us. We're going to interview again because I want to talk about what it's like to run for office as a woman in New York, no doubt. I know that you have some lessons and things, some stories. You probably can't tell all the stories, but some things that we could talk about, because I want to encourage the next generation. And when I say that, I'm talking about next generation in terms of age, but also like the next generation of thinkers. And some of those people are younger and some of them are young adjacent, but it's just really the next generation of thinkers. Professor Teachout, thank you so much for joining us today on Hello Somebody.
Thank you, Senator, for having me on.
Hello Somebody is a production of iHeartRadio and the Black Effect Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.